You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 8th, 2023, and if you take a look at this red string and cork board, we'll show you all the games we're playing.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alborg.
My name is Scott Juster.
And this is a serious but humorous conversation about video games. And woo, the year keeps going. We got them.
Can't stop, won't stop.
We are talking a little bit today about some of the games that we've been playing. We'll close out a conversation about a couple we've already talked about. Also a couple ones that are a little bit more fresh, back into the thick of it. We've got a lot of them to talk about today. Four different, I think, games we generally want to touch on for some time or less. Yeah. Why don't we start with Super Mario Brothers Wonder? We talked about that most recently.
Yes.
Both you and I finished the game.
Yeah, saw credits at least, but I haven't gone through every single like special level. And then I realized I hadn't even gone through every single normal level. There's like little secret ones hidden in there.
Yes, yeah. So there's a bunch of different like levels that get added on once you complete the game. And of course, you can 100% it, right? You could get all of the like 10 coin values or find all of the Wonder Seeds. I tried to be pretty thorough while I was playing, but of course, you know, there's like sections I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Have your thoughts changed at all? I mean, I think this game's still pretty fucking great.
I think it's pretty great. I mean, it's even more things started popping out at me in terms of like how this is like a subtle but very meaningful departure. Like I didn't even really think about it, but there's no timer in this game.
Yeah,
which is also very unusual for any sort of, I mean, most level-based Marios have a timer. Even 3D World,
I keep a timer for all games I play, just like a chess clock,
it's like when it gets down to, you know, 1 minute left, you start to like, you know, turn up the volume on the TV or something. Like, I mean, but there's just so many things. There's so many small departures to the Mario formula, but the core level design makes it just fit very well into the series. And so I don't know. It was impressive from beginning to end. And I actually quite liked the final Bowser boss, the musical Bowser boss at the very end.
I thought all the musical stuff was really great. There was a couple of levels where music was front and center, like you had to act to the beat.
Yep.
And while I was playing that level, I was like, I would just play a whole fucking game like this. I would play a whole Mario-based rhythm game.
Yeah.
With, you know, jumping to the beat. Because there's a few others, right, where it's like you're just platforming, but you have to platform to the beat to sort of execute it. And the music slaps, dude. Like, the fight with Bowser music is so good. Yeah. I would love this game on vinyl because it's a lot of fun. Like, the whole soundtrack is great. I really, really enjoyed it.
I appreciated that stuff more as I played different characters, because each character has a different jumping tone and the tones are instruments. And I don't know. Yeah. I just, it's more subtle than I originally thought. And the ground pound, you know, like the butt stomp is like a drum roll to crash, you know, like everything is an instrument based thing, which I thought was, I don't know, the more I listened to it, the more clever I thought all that stuff was. But yeah, and just all of the different, who knows what's going to happen when you get that wonder flower and you know, what the level's going to turn into. And yeah, it's been a blast. I mean, the kids and I played it together. We were playing with like the Yoshi stuff too, which is also pretty funny and fun to play too. Yeah, I liked it a lot.
My one issue was I wish it was just a little bit faster to get through some of the like dialogue, and you know what I mean? Like there's just a...
There was a like lot of that little worm talking to you.
Yeah, just jumping out and being like, oh, like, or do you want to shift badges? Like, no, bro. Like,
I'll fucking tell you when I want to shift badges.
Yeah, I'll tell you when I want to shift badges. I wish there was kind of like a grown-up mode, like a button I could swap that just lets me like mainline it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just leave some of the chaff. And I wish some of the levels were harder. Like, I wish I could encounter that difficulty. Now, you said you hadn't played any of the special stuff. There's, like, an additional world, a special world.
I played some of it. I just haven't played all of it. There's a few levels that I haven't. There's a few, like, layers that I haven't unlocked yet.
Right. But those ones are no joke. Like, they are genuinely really challenging.
That one where you have to wall jump to the beat was particularly tricky.
So fun. But like that one, I ended up like messing around with the different badges a lot because I was like, I don't know what's going to help me best here.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I like that one when you're doing it to the beat. I was playing this on an airplane at the time, and I was like, this is exactly the type of rhythmic, mind-numbing distraction I need for an airplane flight. So
yeah, you could have, there could have been all around you, pure chaos. There could have been like a fire in the cabin. You're like lurching one way to, there's a goat somehow, and all of a sudden you're just like, dun, 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 dun.
yeah, that's great. Okay, well, anyway, that wraps up our Mario Bros. Wonder conversation, I guess. Really solid game. Good stuff.
For sure. What next?
How about Lies of P? I can give an update on that. I finished Lies of P, everybody.
And that's no lie.
Congratulations to me. No lie. I think Lies of P is really, really good. This is a great game. It is I talked last time about it being a blatant Bloodborne ripoff.
Yep.
And it very much is. Narrative spoilers for Pinocchio, by the way. But at the end, you have to fight Geppetto. Or you don't fight Geppetto, but like you can optionally choose to fight Geppetto's zombie son, I guess. Whoa. Geppetto turns out to be a bad guy.
Wait, I thought you were Geppetto's zombie son.
Sorry, not Geppetto.
Wooden form.
No, yeah. Geppetto is the... Yeah, so you are... Okay, so you are a robot created by Geppetto in the likeness of his human son, who he's kept alive in a trunk. And at the end of the game, he asks to rip your heart out and put it inside his flesh son to bring his flesh son back to life.
And you have a robot heart.
So you can actually do that. That's one ending. Or you could resist and then fight. But in that way, again, clear Bloodborne call out in my book, it is the fight against the optional boss at the end of Bloodborne, right? Like you don't have to fight that boss.
Yep.
But if you do, you get a special combat and a special ending. So it was felt very much like that. Narratively speaking, it's actually pretty good too. Like the story of Lies of P is actually decent.
Yeah.
For a Pinocchio story. you know, it's like there's this disease and there's robots and the narrative of you lying and slowly becoming more human is compelling. There's a couple of side characters and NPCs that are compelling. The combat, not perfect, still really challenging. I think the parry windows are very tight and there's some readability issues. There was one boss in particular that I almost bounced off of because it was a gimmick boss. You know, these types of bosses where like you do no damage unless you hit him in the foot X number of times. And then he's open for a crit and it's that, right? Rinse, wash, repeat. Where if you're lucky and you could dodge perfectly, then it's easy. And if you can't, then it's frustrating. Mm. So there was a couple of moments where I was like, okay, I'm going to bounce. This is ridiculous. But
yeah,
came back to it, used my Dark Souls curmudgeonly stubborn approach.
I'm not going to let this game do this to me.
Yeah, and overcame. The weapons are really cool. I think the weapon, the ability to swap weapon handles is awesome. I did end up experimenting with more weapons. There's one weapon in particular. So I went a strength build, which in this game is called Motivity. It's a huge fuck all axe whose hilt is made out of like the severed arms of robots that are like tied together with barbed wire.
That's funny.
And it is so big that literally like I can't see many enemies. I was like moving the camera to look at them at an angle because the weapon is so large it blocks their approach.
Yeah.
To a point where I swapped that weapon out because I was like, I can't see. Like it's I'm wrecking shop. I'm like fucking these people up, but I can't see anything. God, so the good assortment of weapons, that was super cool. So overall, Lies of P, two thumbs up. Good stuff.
Nice. Can we do like a, I don't know, 3 to 5 minute spoiler for the end of this game?
Oh, right. I almost forgot. So yes. So very small spoilers. Yeah. Minor spoilers for the very end. So I am assuming you had told me a couple days ago, like, oh, hit me up when you finish the game.
Yes.
Because I want to get your reaction about something.
Yeah.
And I was playing and I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. It seems pretty normal. Like, oh, maybe Geppetto keeping a son in a box. Like, I guess that's weird. But then there's a cutscene after the credits where one of the characters that you meet talks about like going to get someone, and it's Dorothy, and you see Dorothy's legs in red shoes like click from Krut. So clearly these devs are planning on just mining, you know, open
the public domain.
Yeah, public domain characters in this Souls verse. And it's so funny because it's almost like they're collecting, I don't know what you'd call them, like metahumans, right? Like Pinocchio is a person that is human, but not human. He's like, he's a half human because he's got human behaviors, traits, even some flesh, but he's a robot. And Dorothy might be one of them as well, I guess.
It's but, so funny. It's like there's no like, there's no, most of the time, there's no connection between the Wizard of Oz and the story of Pinocchio.
Yeah.
But they're just like assembling, like, what's next? Like, who else is in the public domain? Like, Frankenstein. Is Frankenstein going to be up in here next?
Like, okay, but here's like, my first thought, right, is the Alice in Wonderland games, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, really popular, really compelling games.
That somewhere American McGee is like, I've been doing this since the 90s.
Yeah, like American McGee like ripped off the idea of Alice in Wonderland and transformed it into like this bizarre horror game. But it worked. And I think Lies of Pete is the same thing for Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And I'm fully on board. Like, I am all in on Dorothy. Because the great concept of tackling existing characters like this is you can pull in some of the iconography, some of the weirdness of those worlds, and lean into how weird the story is by its nature, right? Pinocchio as someone who lies and his nose grows longer is weird, and it doesn't really exist that same way in Lies of P, but like there are elements from that story that it's teasing out that sort of comment on how bizarre these stories always are. And I think The Wizard of Oz is one of those stories, right? Like, Dorothy gets sucked up into a fucking tornado and there's like flying monkeys and witches and weird little people dancing around and like the scarecrow. You know what I mean? Like, there's very strange stuff. Now, imagine a Bloodborne version of that. Of course it's going to work, right? Like, you've got the I don't know what the little people are called.
The Munchkins.
The Munchkins, right? Like, you've got Munchkins. That could be like a whole race of people that are enemies, right? Like, you've got scarecrows, obviously, like lion men, like beast men. You've got metal men. You've got witch. You've got flying monkeys. Like, there's clearly a lot of iconography you could tap into with Dorothy that I think is cool. Follow that up with Peter Pan, right? Like,
I just did a quick search. Sherlock Holmes.
Sure. Like, I mean, again, I'm all in. And the idea that they're in a shared universe means that you could have, like, potentially, like, Lies of P characters show up in, like, The Wizard of Oz.
It's like, Sherlock needs to solve a mystery because someone got killed with Excalibur. Oh, it's King Arthur.
Yeah. I mean, would you, does it put you off, or what are your initial thoughts?
I just think it's so funny to like, something about that just made me laugh so hard, like hearing that, like the stinger of the game was, check this out, it's the Wizard of Oz. Like, it's just so, like, I just love the audacity of it.
Dorothy's legs, you know, and she clicks her heels.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, and they know what they're doing, you know, like it's just, they're playing it so straight. I don't know. There was something about it that I just admired the pure brassiness of, like, we're going to just fully double down on, like, the gritty fairy tale thing and just keep going with it.
I think there's juice to squeeze from those particular fruits. So. All right. Goodness. How about some new stuff? Do you want to talk a little bit about Alan Wake 2?
Yes. I do want to talk about Alan Wake 2. So, I feel like I have always appreciated Remedy, the developer, from afar, in the same way that I appreciate Kojima stuff, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know much about Remedy, but the lead designer or I don't know if he's CEO of the company, whatever, they're Finnish, so there's like a whole structure that they have over there. Like, his name's Sam Lake. His name is not actually Sam Lake. He has a Finnish name, but he goes by Sam Lake.
His pseudonym.
What'd you say?
His pseudonym. His gnome.
Basically, yeah. And he's he is an auteur for sure. It's funny. I was like Googling him and just kind of learning some more. And like one of the first Google image searches that comes back is him and Kojima like hanging out together. I'm like, all right,
this
is starting to make a lot of sense. You know, like, And so I always admired what they did. You know, the Max Payne stuff I thought was interesting. Like, yeah. Even when they kind of went sideways, like the Quantum Break things that they did with like the Xbox One, like all of that stuff. But I really, really, and this is, we diverged on this quite a bit. I really enjoyed Control. That was their mm-hmm. last game.
Yep.
I thought they really had a breakthrough with Control, which is like, oh, actually, this game is not only weird and meta and there's a bunch of FMV and all that stuff, but like there's some pretty interesting design things going on here, too. And I'm you know, not a huge number of hours in to Alan Wake 2, but I think there's something going on with this game. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it continues to accelerate because it really feels, you know how sometimes you play a game where it's like, wow, this game developer is hitting their stride. Like whatever doing, they have figured it out. And this seems to be the realization of what they've been working on for like 20 years, basically.
It's kind of like the Insomniac trajectory.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Where, like, you play Infamous similar. And you're like, okay, you're getting there. And like second, first light or whatever. And you could see it iterating and improving. And then they get to Spider-Man and you're like, oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah, you did it. Like, this is what you, and then you start to look back in retrospect and you're like, oh, I see it. Like,
yeah, the pieces
I see
were
the DNA
traversal.
Of this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Alan Wake 2 has, so far, the early hours of Alan Wake 2 have given me this like spidey sense of like, this game might be special, actually. I would not blame anyone for being put off from the game because I think, like a lot of their games, there's some stuff that's just rough around the edges, like even from like structural perspective.
Yeah.
I just mean like in terms of how the game works functionally, you know, like the saving system, the checkpointing system, like there's just, this isn't an Insomniac level budget, you know, this isn't a like Sony Santa Monica production. This is something that is extremely high quality, but this studio is probably a few hundred people, you know?
Yeah.
Of which the development side is a subsection of that, you know, like it's not a multi-continent, multi-team, you know, billion-dollar budget type of thing, but it's still a very high quality, but they're spending their money where it needs to be spent versus like on this massive, like God of War type of scale.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And also it's just weird. I mean, like the Sam Blake is in the game. So like the guy, Sam, so, you know, I don't even know if you remember this, but like, you know, Max Payne, like his face, like Sam, that's Sam Blake. Like that's his face.
Of the designer.
Yeah, exactly.
I had no idea. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And so Sam Lake is playing this Alex Casey character in the game, who's kind of like a character supposedly that like Alan Wake was actually writing about in his book. And like there's several like meta sequences where Alan Wake is being interviewed on a fake talk show, and like, you know, the Sam Lake as like an actor is talking about his role in the upcoming Alex Casey movie that they're making about Alan Wake's book. And Alan Wake is like, what the fuck is going on? I don't know about any of this. And Sam Lake is just kind of like winking at the camera the whole time. And I'm like,
yeah,
you know, like
it does sound very Kojima. The way that I've heard this described, it almost reminds me of like a Kojima meets Silent Hill, you know, like a surreal horror, but also there's like this meta text on top of it. Also, I don't know if you know this, but some of the Control, the last DLC for Control, featured a direct reference to Alan Wake.
So one of the first things that you, this game also is very influenced by Twin Peaks, and one of the first like scenes of the murder scenes that you investigate, you walk by this like weird radio station, and the character that you're playing as, Sana, is like, Federal Bureau of Control. What the hell is that? And I'm like, oh, here we go, baby.
Oh,
they're bringing
Shared
it together.
Universe.
Like, yeah. I don't know how much you remember of Control, but I ran into a book that was written by the doctor, you know, the weird kind of like scientist doctor guy. I forget his name. Goodfellow or something like that. And then in one of Alan Wake's sequences, I ran into the janitor from The Oldest House.
Yeah. Oh, remember, yes. Remember that, the janitor.
That freaky old like Finnish like janitor guy.
Yeah. He's in Alan Wake 2?
Yes. In Alan, in one of Alan Wake's, like, Alan Wake is basically stuck in this, like, in the dark zone or whatever. And, like, he's trying to get out. And, like, all of a sudden, you know, you open a door and, like, Ati is back there, the janitor.
I love that kind of shit. I mean, it's like the same thing that kind of makes me weirdly interested in, you know, Warner Brothers MonsterVerse, you know, like Godzilla and Kong. You know what I mean? You just bring them all together.
Yeah.
There's something about that that is kind of compelling.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just the realization, like there's a lot of from a technical perspective, there's a lot of very clever, the game is just very artistic. They're doing a bunch of stuff with like FMV and overlaying it onto gameplay and like cutting back and forth between scenes in a way that is just extremely fluid, and you never really know when and if it's going to happen. And I think we finally gotten to a point with the tech and also the artistic technique where that stuff can just be used as a tool rather than a gimmick. And it's all over the place in the game. And so and they use it to great effect to kind of mess with the environment or, you know, mess with the kind of setting and stuff like that. It's just been impressive so far. I don't know. Like, I'm interested to hear if you end up playing it. I am really interested in talking to you about it because they were doing a lot of stuff with control. And this is a different genre of game. Like, it's a survival horror, not like an action shooter. But you can kind of see some of the things they were doing with control around, like, altering the environment and, like, making it weird and looping and recursive and stuff. And they're kind of going a little bit further with that stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to play it because there's just something fascinating to me about games that are meta and surreal and weird. Yeah. You just don't really see it very often, right? Like, you don't get that opportunity. And except with the exception of being, I mean, funny enough, in Spider-Man, there's some like Mysterio sequences, right? Mm-hmm. Like where they intentionally blend the rules, or Joker sequences in the Batman Arkham games, right? Where, okay, they're using the space of video games and the ability to sort of manipulate things to make something very, very surreal. And it's just something that, like, I don't know, not many people execute on to its fullest. So I'm fully in. I also love Twin Peaks, so, you know, I'm in it.
I mean, one of the opening scenes of this game is Sana and her partner are driving down a windy, foresty road in the Pacific Northwest, and they're talking. And then the camera cuts to, like, a front shot of them, you know, in the front seat of the car. And each of them, in perfect unison, raises a mug of coffee, crooks their arm, and takes a sip at the exact same time at the exact same angle. So it's like, all right, this is the sort of game that we're dealing with here. Yeah. You know?
And then Log Lady's in the back seat being like, hey, you want a log?
The other thing that I thought was very cool about it, just very quickly, is the way that they're constructing the narrative is like each... First off, there's two characters, and you can basically play through their stories however you want, kind of. Like, you can bounce back and forth, or you can continue going forward with one or the other. But each character has a narrative device that pushes the plot forward. So Sana, her thing is she's a FBI detective, and so whenever you learn plot points or you discover clues, you just like quickly button into what she refers to as the mind place, which is like a cabin that she's retrofitted to be her kind of office. And so
is it a physical place, or is this just like a mind palace?
It is a, so she's like, this is the mind place, my version of the mind palace. And I'm like, God damn it. Like,
it's a mind palace, but just less, a bit more humble, right?
That's what, like, it's so crazy. It's like, why would you write that line of dialogue unless you're purposely trying to be a fucking weirdo? You know, like, it's just, anyway, it is the mind palace.
You can get away with a lot if you're intentionally being weird.
Yes. You know? And that is this game. And so, and that's why I'm saying, like, it could be off-putting to people, but if you're in for the ride, then like there's something there. But anyway, like the way that you construct the plot and push narrative elements forward is the game will give you a series of clues, and you basically just have to arrange them in a certain logical pattern that unlocks the next chapter or unlocks the next checkpoint that you need to do. And both Alan Wake and Sana have her they each have this kind of like kind of mind palace, metaphysical room or whatever that you're like constructing the plot of the game in. And it's just like a clever way of, dealing with, how do you tell a detective story, but how do you accommodate that in a game that is not about a puzzle game? You know, this isn't something, this isn't a,
You're not a detective. You're not solving a crime or something.
Yeah, you're basically just putting things in the right order, so it gives you the sense of it. Or for Alan Wake, you're writing. You're like writing stuff. Like in his thing, it's called the writer's room, and he just has like a typewriter and a chalkboard and stuff, and you're like plotting things out. Mm-hmm. Who is the developer that makes all of the kind of found footage and inspection games? That puts a game out every once in a while where you have to like index things and archive them. Last year it was a game about like old school Hollywood.
Oh, like Sam Barlow's team.
Yes. It's not like that's the whole game, you know, like when Sam Barlow makes a game like that, that is the game. Whereas this has the trappings of something like that, but it's nowhere near as complex or, meant to stump you. It's meant just to kind of feel good to push the plot forward, but the trappings are quite similar, actually, in my opinion.
Yeah. My one hesitation about playing it, honestly, is that I heard it's genuinely scary.
It's pretty freaky.
Yeah. Not playing with the kids around?
I mean, I can only play it at night, and then I've been having to like play it with headphones on because like some freaky shit starts happening.
I don't know if I can do that. Not with headphones. Headphones genuinely freak me out almost like more than just being in a dark room, you know?
Yeah, I mean...
Audio just is terrifying.
It is. I mean, the audio is great, and, like, the stuff that they do with it, and they combine it with the FMV, and, like, I recommend it, but, yeah, it is a pretty freaky game for sure.
Well, I will play it, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, cool. Tell us about our friendly neighborhood Spider-Men.
Yes, last but not least, I've been playing Spider-Man 2... this is the follow-up to Spider-Man, but the follow-up directly, I guess, to the Miles Morales game.
Yep.
I think Miles Morales is better than the initial Spider-Man.
Yeah, and I like that game a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a great story as well. Overall, I was super happy with it. I think also scaling it down as like a sort of double-A game made it for a better experience.
Yep.
I'm pretty deep, actually, I would say, at this point into Spider-Man 2. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm through, like, the first third of the game, you know? I'm into a large section where Spider-Man is now in the Venom symbiote.
Oh, yeah.
I've got some Venom powers. I think of that bloat is felt in this game. I'm going to be honest. I'm not really actually liking it all that much, which I'm kind of surprised to be saying, because I think generally the reviews have been really solid.
Yeah.
I think the writing is sometimes a little bit just slightly clunkier than it needs to be. Maybe it's the sequencing that I'm doing it, because you can swap back and forth between Peter and Miles. Maybe it's the heavy lifting around Harry Osborn being the source of Venom, and he gets powers for a while, and it's just from a narrative perspective, it feels like I'm the first section is racing to get to the point where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Right? Which is to say, like, the actual setup. But before you get there, there's a lot of, like, kind of slow narrative moments. You know, sometimes you're just you're at Peter Parker, not Spider-Man, walking through a building, looking at stuff, right? Yeah. Or there's a flashback sequence where Peter is sort of reliving a moment in high school that just feels so not what I signed up for, to be honest. I think the added mechanics are very complicated. So now you have skill trees for Miles. You have a skill tree for Peter Parker, but you also have a skill tree for both of them. But you also have like your own stats to upgrade, like specific like damage stats and health stats. You can also upgrade all of your gadgets. So the things that you can upgrade across the board are just all over the place. Like there's just a lot you can be doing. And when you add the Venom suit, it adds yet another layer because you now have these Venom powers on top of that.
Yeah. Right?
So I think that just gets kind of complicated. And then when you're switching back and forth, you're like, okay, well, do I invest in Peter? Do I invest in Miles? Do I do both? That the parts that you use to upgrade are shared across those. So for the most part, so there are some elements where you're like, okay, well, I can afford this, but it means I'm not going to get a different suit. So I think there's a layer of complexity there that to me is just, I'm not, Maybe it's the amount of games I've been playing lately, but right. I don't have the patience to sort of wade deep into it. They also added this wingsuit that allows you to traverse New York very, very quickly.
Yeah. And it's like those flying sequences I saw in some of the pre-release
I'm getting to like it a little bit because I think they do an okay job of not making it be sort of front and center, but it, in a very real way, it does replace swinging, right? Like I am hitting triangle a lot to go into the wingsuit, to go back into swinging, to get back into my wingsuit. And I don't want to be Superman. I want to be Spider-Man. Like, I want to swing. And I know this sounds like such a weird complaint, right? Because I could just choose not to use it. I could just swing through New York, right? But it's a massive world. You're going to have to move around quickly. So I'm constantly using it anyway.
Yeah.
And again, there's just something about flying through the sky that doesn't feel Spider-Man to me, you know? So
it did look unique, like, for sure. Like, I mean, and to be fair, I'm like hopelessly out of date in terms of like what is current comic book Spider-Man like. But it did look pretty different from, you know, generally what Spider-Man is doing. So that's kind of interesting to hear.
What other issues I have with the game? I think that the faces look absolutely awful. I don't know what's happened. Like, I genuinely don't know what's happening.
What'd they do to my boy?
I think it looks worse than the last game. Like, everything, actually, I should say this. The world looks gorgeous. The clothing looks awesome. There's something wrong with everyone's face. And it's not like Mass Effect Andromeda bad, right? But it's more like Uncanny Valley bad. Like, there's something about the way that their faces move. The way that their faces always kind of have like a sort of sweaty sheen to them, you know, and you could see the pores. Like, I think there's it's ventured into the uncanny valley realm where anytime I see someone's face up close, which is a lot, especially in the first third.
There's a lot of story in the game.
A lot of story. It's very off-putting to me. Like, I really don't like it. There's a scene where Peter Parker and MJ kiss. And it's just, it just felt so weird, right? Like, going back to like Mass Effect or something, right? Where it's not kissing, it's just kind of like two faces
smashed together.
Now, and like now kiss, and they're each kind of like sweaty, or like Peter will smile, and it comes off more of like a weird alien, like I want to eat you smile than like a human smile, you know? There's just something very off putting. And I Googled this because I was genuinely curious, like, is something wrong with me?
Is it just me?
It's not just me. Maybe mileage may vary. I'm playing on the PlayStation 5. Maybe it's better on the PC or whatever. But I am not the only one out there that thinks that for whatever reason, the faces look a mess in Spider-Man 2. So that's that. In terms of combat, it's perfectly fine. It's just as good as it's always been. They throw a lot of fucking guys at you. I have murdered so many of Kraven's men. I don't know where he's recruiting all these people. How does the dude recruit so many people? Also, that's my other issue. I think Kraven is one of the least interesting Spider-Man villains you could have.
I know next to nothing about
Kraven. Let me teach you about him. Yeah. Dude wants to hunt.
Oh, okay.
He hunts. That's what he does. He's a hunter. And again, maybe that will develop. Maybe there's some like tragic backstory. I did find a notebook where it's like, my mom taught me to hunt, and therefore I carry on the tradition by fucking hunting the most dangerous game of all, superheroes, right? Like, it's just weird. It's not a compelling or interesting narrative arc to me. Miles' storyline is still by far the most interesting. Again, I have a lot more game to get through. Spider-Man 2 is a very long game. There's a lot of story to this.
Yeah.
And I think the relationship between Miles and Peter is still really strong. But it did not come out of the gate wowing me in any significant way.
Yeah.
I love playing as Spider-Man. And that will carry me through this entire game. Because Spider-Man is one of my favorite superheroes of all time, right? Like, just straight up, I love Spider-Man. I love Miles Morales. So I'm going to stick with it. But I am surprised by my lack of enthusiasm around it so far.
It's interesting. I mean, I played less of these games than you have, and so I wonder if I play it, if I just haven't gotten my quota, and so I'll still be like enamored with it because I didn't go through the first game for sure. I did Miles Morales, but like it seems like a lot. That's what I've also heard. It's just that there's so much. There's like so many different side things. There's just
Oh yeah,
it's an incredible buffet of open world stuff.
You know what I will say? They improved in the first game. There are scenes where you play as Mary Jane, and they're like stealth sequences, and they were fucking atrocious. And they're way better now. Like you actually feel you are stealthy and have power. Right. So of those sequences, like they work. But yeah, there's just a lot going on. And you know, normal Spider-Man combat is interrupted with quite a bit of frequency of you doing like your little spider robot in vents now, or you know, you've got to do this stealth sequence. Like it is jumping between different mechanics quite a bit. And I don't know, again, maybe it's the time and place, right? It's jarring to me in the suite of games that I'm playing now. Because at this point, I'm playing no less than three games at a single time, three or four games at a time. Now, I play a lot of games already, but this year in particular, in my attempt to try to like stay somewhat on the pulse of games that are coming out, like three games minimum, right? I'm playing an indie game at all times. I've got Spider-Man 2, just finished Lies of P. That's going to become Alan Wake. So jumping into a game like Spider-Man and then going, okay, well, what is going on? And I'm jumping around and there's a lot of things to worry about. It can stand in stark contrast to some of the other games that you're playing. And I think that is genuinely coloring my take on Spider-Man 2. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts if you decide to jump in and play it at all.
Yeah.
Because maybe you don't have that same baggage. I suspect you'll have some of the same feelings that I do, though. Based upon... Right. Our end of year conversations around like games that are elegant, or when we talk about the most superfluous gamey award, right? Like, I think Spider-Man 2 is gonna fit in that category at some point.
I want to at least check it out because, and you know what? Maybe this kind of like the first Spider-Man. Maybe it becomes a platform for follow up games or DLC that are. Scoped better. In such a way because it seems like they have such a robust engine and platform and technology and all that stuff, and using it for a specific purpose is just as valid, if not more fun, than having everything in the kitchen sink.
I will also lament for the last, probably not the last time, I guess, how much I wish this game were two players. Have Spider-Man and we have Peter Parker. Miles Morales and Peter Parker, literally in the same sequence. Like, you will fight together. The fact that you, Scott, cannot be my Miles, what a miss. It would have been so cool. And I know it's so hard because the world's so big, but if it were scoped down, I just feel like that would be so rewarding. And I really hope it's on their roadmap for Spider-Man 3.
Or some sort of...
Or the DLC.
DLC, yeah. I mean, like, they have to be doing that, but... Yeah, interesting. Well, it makes me intrigued to hopefully loop back to some of these games because, I want to talk a little bit more about them once we get further in.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
All right, well, let's leave it there for this episode. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts. Go ahead and web-sling your way over there and tell a friend.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time.